What's happening, Nashville? Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live on the Game Nashville app as well. You can download that app, tap that app, and listen to us that way. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson is at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, good morning. What's up?
Good morning, Chase. How are you on this fine Wednesday? Hump day?
Hump day? I'm feeling good because I watched the 95 Braves last night.
You know what?
They beat up on a team you know.
You know what? We don't need to go down that road. You know, this morning started perfectly fine, and now you have to bring up that 95 NLCS. We just don't need to discuss it.
There are
better things to talk about this morning.
Well, there are a lot of things to talk about, but I did enjoy. I got to say this real quick. I forgot how much I loved Marquise Grissom. He was a fun player to watch.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he was.
Yeah. So yeah. He was fast, too.
Yeah.
Hitting a triple.
I'm sure he was.
But anyway, that's not what we're here to do. I'm not here to gloat about things that happened a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away.
Oh, but you are.
There are updates to be had, Ryan, because the MLB, NBA, NHL, MLS, it would appear that there are rumblings, at least, that, hey, we could be close on some of these sports to actually returning. So I figured what we would do today in the first segment is go around the world with these leagues and do a quick update on where things are. Now, with baseball, we know that the owners came up with a proposal that they liked that would say 82-game schedule, a 50-50 split between the owners and players when it comes to revenue, universal DH. They would realign the divisions to basically work with geography, so you'd have the NL East and the AL East kind of all in one area. That would be the interleague play that you would get. So that was the plan, and then they were going to present that to the Players Association and see what they could come up with. So far, you know, we haven't seen news on that. Tim Kirkjian from ESPN is going to join Darren Donick and Chase at 10:15 today to discuss that further to see where we are on that. But Jeff Passan, also of ESPN, who has been all over this stuff, he says that the focus on the meeting is the health and safety of everyone involved.
In the end, money may be getting talked about a lot, but today the focus is going to be on health and safety. And that's an understandable priority for both sides here. You know, the optics of the money are absolutely terrible. Like when you're coming out in the middle of a pandemic, whether it's on the player side or on the league side, and you are prioritizing money, it's just a really, really bad look, as much as that's something that needs to get done.
So there's Jeff Passan on that, and that the money is not actually the most important thing. Now, I bring that up and play that clip because the multi-hour meeting that took place yesterday between baseball and the players, they didn't really talk that much about compensation. It really was the health and safety of the players. Now, I wonder, I hope they're doing this because that's the right thing to do, and that's the thing that they need to focus on. But I do wonder when the whole money conversation is going to come into play.
Well, I chuckled to myself during that Jeff Passan clip when he was like, oh, well, the health and safety is an understandable priority. And I'm sitting here thinking, well, that needs to be the top priority through all this. You know, the biggest storyline with that proposal was the 50-50 revenue split. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what the pie looks like in terms of the money unless they can find a healthy and safe way to come back successfully. And the last thing you want to do if you're Major League Baseball is come back, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month early, 2 months early, and you have to shut down after, you know, 2 to 4 weeks of play because there's an outbreak of COVID within different teams. That is the last thing you want to do. So, yeah, the health and safety needs to be a huge priority, not just an understandable priority, as Jeff Passan put it. So I'm glad to hear that the first day of talks after this proposal was around the health and safety. But we all know that these two sides have a history of going at it when it comes to money. And once that discussion comes up, I think that is when we're going to find out how much both sides really want to play baseball in 2020.
Yeah, items addressed include timing and logistics for a second spring training, potential rule changes, roster sizes and transaction rules, and around COVID-19 testing procedures, including contact tracing and response procedures in case of positive tests. Also address where ballpark access procedures moving forward, as well as the health and safety issues away from the ballpark. It is believed that once all of that is figured out, that's when they get into the money.
So one question that just came to mind when you brought up the word transactions was, would there be a limit on which teams you can trade with? If they're trying to keep players within different regions with the realignment, can you only trade within your division?
I haven't thought about that. That's a really good point.
I could be overthinking that, but I would be interested to know if it's like normal with transactions or if there's a limit for 2020.
That's a good point. I'm going to make sure to bring that up a little later on with our guest, Tim Kirkchin. That's a very, very good question, Ryan, because I'm not sure.
Bring that stuff up.
Yeah, well, this is why we love you. So appreciate
that. Thank
you.
Appreciate it.
So there's the MLB. Now to the NBA. Now, we've kind of felt like over the last few days that it was starting to look pretty good for the NBA. And I know there was a Board of Governors call on Tuesday with Adam Silver. Reports are that he left feeling increasingly positive about the league's momentum towards a resumption of play this season. That's according to Woj and his sources at ESPN. So Woj goes on to say that the NBA has begun reaching out to players, basically asking them yes or no, how do you feel about returning?
The union had a meeting on Friday, a conference call with Adam Silver, members of the executive committee, and a number of players in their rank and file. And, you know, they heard from Adam Silver where he felt things stood right now. And I think at any given time, the Players Association has to have a sense of where its broader membership stands. There's 450 players. Most of them, almost all of them, are not stars. They're not the leadership of the executive committee. And it gives them a sense to get, a feel for where a lot of heads are at.
Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN, NBA Insider, the PA, actually doing the reaching out with the players. I think it's important that he noted that it's not just the superstars, that it's everybody getting their opinion, because that's very important, that you go from the top down to find out how these players are feeling. And I was watching SVP last night, and they had a clip of Larry Nance Jr. of the Cavs, who is adamant about returning and crowning a champion. I appreciate that type of support from a player, but I am curious of what the overall feeling of the players themselves will be. I don't know if we're going to know exactly how everybody voted. I don't think we will, but I'm curious of that.
Well, there was an article that surfaced yesterday from Yahoo Sports saying that LeBron, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, Giannis, Russell Westbrook, KD, Kawhi, Stephen Curry held private conference call on Monday, and they established a united front in favor of resuming the season. And to your point, it's good to hear that more than just those superstars listed in that Yahoo report are overwhelmingly in favor of some sort of comeback. I would expect the NBA to resume with the playoffs, just like we're starting to hear with the NHL, that is an increasing likelihood. So we'll see.
And reports are that the players do back a season's return in a poll that was done by the PA. So
yeah,
that...
and just to add to that, just like everybody when they talk about the NHL says that there's no point in the Detroit Red Wings coming back and playing hockey for 12 games and then having their season come to an end. There's no point in teams like the Timberwolves or the Warriors or the Cavs to do the same thing. I mean, you basically know in the NBA who your playoff teams are. There's enough of a difference between the playoff contenders. Like the Memphis Grizzlies would be the current 8 seed in the West, and they're up 3.5 games on Portland, New Orleans, and Sacramento. And in the East, Orlando would be the current 8 seed, and they're 5.5 games ahead of Washington for the 8 seed in the East. So I would say you just come back with your 16-team playoff, and you resume it like you would, would have played it in middle of April.
And now the MLS, and we're going to talk to Nashville SC defender Daniel Lovitz a little later on at the bottom of the hour. But this plan being thrown out there on Twitter, Sam Stajeskal put this out. They would begin training in Florida on June 1, individuals only, small group training on June 8th, full training on June 15th, hope to start games on June 22nd. That is the crux of it for the MLS. And if that's the case, then by my math, they would be the first league, I guess, that makes their return, because it would be early June. Now, I guess you could count baseball if baseball gets spring training going, but actually playing games, if they get games going by June 22nd, you can say MLS would be the first.
Yes, and we have to remember that this is Major League Soccer's plan. We'll see what the Players Association for MLS comes back with. But true. This is and this is just a report, so this isn't, you know, gospel yet. But it is good to see that these reports are coming out, that Major League Soccer, June 22nd, seems a little early. If you're starting individual workouts June 1st and then smaller group June 8th and then full team June 15th, June 22nd seems a little early to get matches going. But, you know, just like NHL or NBA, MLS is up against a clock to get their season resumed if they want to play a full season.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that all these meetings seem to be happening all at the same time? I mean, they're all talking. That's the point, and that's a good thing. That's what I want to see more of.
I mean, if these leagues are waiting until Memorial Day to have these discussions, then they're doing it wrong.
Yeah, I mean, no, I agree.
With the clock that they're up against, you know, MLS at a lesser scale than NHL and NBA, because you know, the NHL and the NBA, they may have to make a call in early June of whether or not they are actually going to complete their season, where MLS may not have to make that call that soon. But it does look like in Orlando, with all 26 teams at the ESPN Wide World of Sports Complex, you know, closed-door matches down there, it sounds like this is a route that MLS wants to go down, and that would be phenomenal if they can make this happen.
Yeah, and it'd be good for them if they are the first, because it's, like I've said with NASCAR or UFC, you know, you get more eyeballs on your sport that you haven't had before.
Sure.
And I think that's a positive, and that's why I believe there is a little bit of a race to be the first league back. Now the NHL, the National Hockey League, Darren Dreger of TSN, NHL Insider, he was on Insider Trading, I should say, last night, asked about phase two of the NHL's return protocol and when that could go into place.
So how close is the NHL to bringing in phase two of their plan to resume, which would be players getting back together? And Dregs, what sort of rules would be in place when they do that?
Well, look, let's start with the beginning of the question. It's impossible to identify, James, a true deadline. Of course, the hope is later this month. There are some clubs who are optimistic that might happen in terms of initiation of phase two. There are other teams around the NHL that are way more pessimistic, especially given the surge in cases in Russia. But there's a lot of work being done on the protocol between the NHL, the Players Association, and the Return to Play Committee. Now, some of the protocol in phase two is pretty obvious. It's small gatherings stuff. It's social distancing. It's scheduled shifts when players are allowed to return to their home clubs. It's small dedicated team staff working on training and whatnot. And it's strict sanitization protocol. All of this could be decided and determined and agreed upon at some point this week. It could drift into next week.
Darren Dreger on TSN's Insider Trading last night discussing this. Now, we had Greg Wyshynski on with us on Darren, Donick, and Chase yesterday, and I feel we're kind of rehashing things that we already knew. There's not really a major update or many major changes as it pertains to the NHL right now, but here in the next, you know, week or so, I would think that there could be more news. But it's just getting back, you know, the going through the phases. And as you heard Dreger lay out there, I mean, they're having to take this day by day.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dreger did point out that if not this week, we should learn next week whether or not they can start phase two by the end of May. Phase two would be a great step in the right direction for the NHL. And like we've been saying all along, Chase, these leagues have to be paying attention to one another. and the fact that these reports for the NBA are that there's momentum gaining in terms of a return, I think bodes well for the NHL as well.
Completely agree. So there you go. That's the update. And I also know that the NFL and the NFLPA are going to be meeting soon to discuss some things, just trying to get ahead of it all, even though they have a few months before their season and training camp would get underway. So there's your update, the return to play, something that we're getting used to here on ESPN 102.5 The Game and all sports outlets, because that's just the way the cookie crumbles these days. The NCAA, though, Mark Emmert, he has he's made a ruling on something. We will discuss that when we come back. The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. You're listening to The Rundown. Here is Ryan and I are at our home studios. Marquise Munson is back at the Wholesale Link studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. Be sure to enter the ESPN The Game Nashville's uniform drawing contest for a chance to win a sports jersey from the Nashville Predators, Nashville SC, Nashville Sounds, Vandy, or MTSU. Download a jersey template from thegamenashville.com or draw your own and submit for your chance to win. On Monday, we need you to help us decide who wins by voting on the top three uniformers from each category: hockey, soccer, football, basketball, and baseball, with the winner getting a jersey from that sport. For more details and to enter, visit thegamenashville.com. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out with you. So the NCAA, Ryan, Mark Emmert has said, and this is from an article from ESPN.com, Heather Denich, of course, putting this out there. Mark Emmert said on Tuesday that the NCAA will not mandate or oversee a uniform return to college sports. He believed that up to state officials and university presidents. So once again, the NCAA, which is an organization that is supposed to oversee over all of college athletics, is basically saying, yeah, y'all do your own thing. We'll figure it out. That's how I take that.
Remember when we were having this discussion last week and we were saying we don't trust Mark Emmert to do the right thing for college football or the NCAA as a whole? This is the perfect example. I mean, the fact that he's just going to leave it up to these officials to decide on their own for their own universities whether or not they're going to play college athletics, it's really disappointing. And this comes on the heels of, you know, there were several Pac-12 coaches that expressed support for that mandated uniform start to the season. We heard James Franklin last week ask for the same thing. And if you don't do this, if Mark Emmert continues to go down this road of just saying, you know what, it's up to everybody else, then it's going to be a complete disaster. And at that point, it better be up to the conferences and the conference commissioners of, you know, there being some solidarity within the conferences so that it's not school by school. Because if it's school by school, then it's going to be a train wreck.
And it's not going to work. This is, you know, Darren and I had a pretty heated debate, and Willie jumped into it too, about something that you and I discussed, and that is having a college football commissioner or a college basketball commissioner. And Darren's point was that you already have things in place with the conferences, and the conference commissioners are in charge of their conference, and so are they going to want to give up that power? And I understand there are a ton of logistics. This is very different from any of the professional sports because of the way that it's set up and has been set up. But this is a prime example of you need somebody making these decisions that is willing to make these decisions and get all these conference commissioners in a room and say, guys, we got to get on the same page. Guys and girls, we have to get on the same page in order for this to work. And they don't have that person. It's not Mark Emmert. He's the president of the NCAA, but he's not that guy. The NCAA is not that organization. So that's the point that I'm trying to make and believe that needs to happen, because they don't have a solid group. I don't even think they have a committee that can make the right decision. It's just, it's all over the place, and it's a cluster.
Mm-hmm. It absolutely is. And, you know, another issue with this is the fact that there's no real players association to go along with a college football commissioner in a hypothetical world. There's no players association. I mean, all these kids are kind of on their own. So if, let's say, the University of Florida says we're going to come back and play sports, well, who's to say that X number of Florida Gators student athletes are going to say, you know what? You know, we don't think it's safe to do this the way that you guys are wanting to do it. Then, you know, we're not going to partake. You know, these leagues are having, you know, well thought out meetings of, you know, the MLS wants to have a hub city in Orlando and have all the teams at the ESPN Wide World of Sports. The NHL having discussions of hub cities, the MLB having a lot of different discussions where there's a lot of organization. And yes, there's still a lot to work through. And a lot of that includes COVID-19 and whether or not they can safely pull off a comeback or a full season. There is no committee right now for college football to do this. It's all willy-nilly. And at least that's the way it comes across. And if there's no organization by the middle of summer, this thing is going to be chaotic. And it's going to be a lot more difficult for college sports to pull off what we all hope they can pull off than it is going to be for professional sports. And it is fascinating to think about what could happen with college athletics if college football doesn't happen. If what could happen to college athletics if only half of the college football teams in Division I come back and play. It's going to be a crazy, crazy fall if Mark Emmert doesn't put in some sort of, you know, solidarity for these college athletics instead of just saying, you know what, it's up to the universities and state officials to decide themselves.
You know how bad of a look it's going to be when the NFL is playing their games and college football isn't? And I understand that's professional and that's collegiate, and there are different things involved there, but it's going to be a bad look because basically how people are going to view it is, well, they got it figured out. Why couldn't you? They got their stuff figured out, and you're still sitting there twiddling your thumbs trying to figure out, you know, what you're going to do. And here we are in October, and the NFL is a month into their season. That and to your point, and what Darren and I've been listening to for a month and a half, if college football doesn't happen, then the swim coach is cleaning out his office.
Sure.
I mean that's what's happening. The soccer coach, you know, they're all done. It's over. And who knows when they come back, if they ever come back.
Yeah. Mark Emmert just isn't the true leader that the NCAA needs through this. And I have a bad feeling that it's going to come back to bite them.
But this has been building for so long, Ryan.
Absolutely.
That it's not just this. Now they are faced with an unprecedented situation that nobody knew how to prepare for, but this now shows the deficiencies that the NCAA has had for years that we have all talked about. And now it's all center stage, even more so than ever before. And they have no idea how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, most leagues don't have a very good idea, but they're figuring it out as they go. They're getting their committees together. They're getting people together. They're talking to players' associations like, okay, obviously this is new. Let's figure this out. The NCAA is like, hey, you know what? Instead of being all together and having solidarity, individual states and university presidents, you guys figure it out. We're good.
So, like, with this, the fact that there's no uniform date to come back with college sports, does that mean the SEC is free to start, you know, late August, and then the Big Ten has to wait another month because more of their schools are in states that have been hit harder by COVID?
Probably.
I mean,
you're going to see situations like I'm going to just use this as a hypothetical, and I kind of brought this up last week about doing super conferences, but let's say that Penn State, they're good to go, and the Big Ten is basically saying, hey, we're out right now. Most of our schools, you're just going to have to wait with the rest of us, and Penn State's like, nah, we're not going to be doing that, and then they just go rogue and start calling schools that are good in conferences that are good, and they don't necessarily join another conference, but they start making a schedule. I bet you see something like that because there's no clear-cut leader saying you have to do this or this is our plan. So you're going to have these university presidents or athletic directors saying, well, fine. You don't want to help us and tell us what to do, then we'll do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I could totally see something like that happening. But Mark Emmert, good job. NCAA getting it done, as they always do. Not really, but it's something that we are used to. We talked about the MLS and their potential return, their plan that the league has put out there. We'll talk to a player. Nashville SC defender Daniel Lovitz will join us when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are streaming on the Game Nashville app. You can download that from the Google Play or the App Store, or also enable our Alexa skill or Google Home. Just ask to play 102.5 The Game, or always go to thegamenashville.com to live stream the shows. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson. We say hello to Nashville SC defender Daniel Lovitz. Daniel, good morning. How are you?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. It's nice to actually be talking about a potential return for all these sports, including yours. I know that that has to be nice, and I saw that Nashville SC held some voluntary workouts at the practice facility at Curry Ingram Academy, and like I said, voluntary, just kind of an open thing, but to get back on the field. So how has that part of it been going now that there potentially could be some things moving forward from the league that allows you guys to start training officially?
Well, it's super exciting more than anything. It's nice that the powers that be are trying to figure out the safest and most efficient and effective way for us to get back. And although, you know, I'd be lying if I told you it doesn't feel a little bit like a circus right now with showing up to the field and everything is coordinated, you know, from the parking spot to the screening before you get on the field, and then you can only really work out in a quarter area of the space, can't pass to anybody. So that's all a little bit strange. But at the end of the day, we're making do, trying to find, like I said, the best and most safe way to get everybody back. But it's the first step in a process that hopefully speeds up in the coming weeks and we can get back to some form of normal.
Now, one of the proposals that I saw that the MLS shared with teams was basically having individual training open on June 1st, full training on June 15th. Games could start as early as June 22nd. In my mind, that seems kind of soon, a little too soon. But what about you? If that were the case, June 22nd or thereabouts, does that feel feasible to you?
I'm really not qualified to say. I have no idea. I just try to stay up to date with the news and the updates with everything pandemic related. And obviously the sports piece of it is my life, so I'm very tuned into that. But, you know, from a player standpoint, we all want to get back and we want to get playing. I think that's obvious. And I think it's pretty much the same for the league. They want to put on games. They want to make money. They want to protect the brand and what MLS has become and how exciting the league has become, and especially with two new teams this year, it's important that we play games as soon as possible and as many games as possible. So I think it's important. I think the date is wishful thinking, of course, but at the moment we don't really know if, you know, how feasible it actually is. We hope that it ends up going through, but at the end of the day, we're kind of at the mercy of how the whole bigger picture moves, and for now we're just taking the smaller steps as far as individual training goes and all the other things, and hope that we can progress along those fronts and, you know, the big events like getting a game in and getting the whole team together finally. We really hope that happens sooner rather than later.
Nashville SC defender Daniel Lovitz here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Daniel, in that proposed plan, there is really only a week or two of organized team activities that were together and not just individual activities. What, in your mind, is the right amount of time for you guys to get back on the pitch and start practicing before you're scheduled to play a match?
It's a great question. I don't really know if I have the right answer. I think the only thing that I've been exposed to as far as, you know, a training camp lead up into normal league play would be is comparing it to preseason, which is usually about, you know, the better span of almost 2 months. I don't think that that's really necessary at this point. I think, you know, the club has to rely on the players being professional during this hiatus and staying fit. And so it's not like we're rolling in off of an off season. This is more like an active break. So I would hope that we could cut that in half, but I would have a hard time believing that anything less than 3 weeks would be sufficient in terms of getting everyone together and providing all teams sort of a a template and a platform to build off of as we start back to normal play. But, you know, I think time is of the essence and there's a sensitivity to that aspect of it. And I think when it comes down to it, I think a lot of guys and certainly clubs would be eager to maybe cut that time down a little bit to make sure that we could get out there in front of fans or whatever capacity it could be if it's just cameras.
Well, we all expect whenever sports do return that there won't be fans in the stadiums and the arenas. Have you thought about how strange that could be without having fans in attendance watching your games?
Yeah, I have. Obviously, it's such a strange thing to wrap your head around, especially when you're at home and trying to think about, you know, what that might be like. And, you know, you think back about how much you maybe were taking it for granted before, and being able to walk out and to play and to compete in some amazing places, especially here in Nashville in front of so many passionate fans. It's something that we are accustomed to, obviously, to do on a weekly basis. But when that's taken away, it's really a shock to the whole operation, frankly. And from the player standpoint, it's a huge missing piece. It would be weird just to hear our voices and our teammates' voices on the field and not hear any crowd noise or anything like that. But, you know, like I said, we're trying to find the best way to go about it. I think the most important thing is that, you know, we as players can find a way and a safe way to compete and to save some of the season and to have something for the fans to interact with and to watch, even if it's just from home. I think connecting with the fan base is still such an important thing. But it is going to be incredibly weird if things do come to that and we are playing games in stadiums or even just at neutral sites without fans. It's just really hard to wrap your head around.
Nashville SC defender Daniel Lovitz here with us on the Rundown. And sticking with that, with, you know, just being on TV, you know, I try and look at everything with the glass half full. And, you know, with MLS continuing to grow, Nashville SC is a brand new team. I feel like being in homes and being on television and being one of the only games in town could be very good for you all, because you're going to get new eyes on your sport that maybe they just don't know much about soccer or just haven't tuned in before. I feel like that could be a positive.
Oh, I agree with you 100%. I think it's a unique opportunity. I think maybe it might be the silver lining of this situation for MLS and for the sport in this country. As everyone knows, it's always a competition for eyeballs in terms of viewership and getting attention to the sport, to the league, to the brand that is MLS. And this is a unique opportunity. And I think the progress that MLS has shown over the last, you know, over its lifetime is really positive. And I think a lot of people are starting to understand where this sport will end up. It certainly isn't there yet. But I think this would be a really interesting opportunity to maybe jumpstart the awareness of the sport if it's one of the only games being played at the moment. I think that's a great opportunity. I think it also comes at a cost of being one of the first major leagues to step into, you know, reorganizing and replaying some form of competition. But again, the powers that be will decide when the right time for that is, and if we can make sure that it's under the safest and most effective conditions and, you know, protects the players. I think it's a great, great idea and hopefully something we can work out.
How cool has it been for you to see, with a new franchise, the inaugural season? The groundwork was laid with the USL team and what's been happening in the last few years, but to see the support of a ever-growing fan base through this downtime. I've enjoyed seeing posts on social media, and I know Fox 17 replayed the first game. Just the support that's been there with the fan base for you all during this downtime.
It's been so important to us because that's, again, the most important piece that we're missing right now is we don't get to get out in front of the fans. We don't get to interact as much. And although social media is always a great dynamic and great platform to interact with fans, it should be a supplement and not the primary form of it, in my opinion. And getting out to games and interacting with fans and doing stuff in the community, I think that's what everyone would prefer, and that's what we all love doing. But to be stripped of that is certainly odd. But it's been enlightening to have, you know, all these different things that we've been able to put on, like the replay of the first game, to have a lot of different online contests and content being put out that we can still reach out to fans. I think the club's been doing a great job, and I've been lucky enough to get on to some of those. But at the same time, it's difficult. We want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and moving forward. But like you said, the positive momentum that I felt when I showed up here was, you know, the first thing I noticed was the guys that had been here in the USL games and the USL team, and they knew how special this was going to be now that we were in MLS. And their excitement was my first indication of what things were going to be like here. And of course, immediately we have to go to preseason. We're not really in Nashville, and we don't really get to feel it. And then we show back up, and we're here for a week leading up to the first game, and it was just a really special week and, of course, an amazing night.
Nashville SC defender Daniel Levitz here with us on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Daniel, just looking at that inaugural MLS match specifically here in Nashville, and, you know, unfortunately, before the season pause, you guys only get two games in. But thinking back to that night against Atlanta at Nissan Stadium, how special was that for you to be a part of such a big moment for soccer in this city?
It's incredible. I mean, we compare the MLS to a lot of different leagues, soccer leagues around the world, and I understand it, but at the same time, you know, when was the last time any team in Europe had that opportunity to play the first inaugural match? You know, that stuff is unique to MLS right now with the expansion, and it's so exciting, and frankly, it's one of the main reasons I came here, to be a part of that night and to be a part of this year, although the year hasn't exactly been going to plan. But that first night is something I'll never forget. It's such a unique opportunity that is really hard to find in sports in general, I think, to be a part of the first ever match in front of the crowd that we had and the magnitude that we had there. It was an energy that's hard to really describe unless you were there and you were able to experience it. And, you know, for us that were lucky enough to be on the field, it's just incredible. I mean, most times you can play the game and you go about the game and you have certain moments where the adrenaline is flowing. But, you know, that entire game, I don't think I remember breathing. It was just pure adrenaline the whole time. And you get out after the game and, you know, we're all disappointed that we lost and we thought we played well and we didn't get the result. But we're all kind of looking around in the locker room. Like, I've never felt like this after a game. I am completely exhausted. I don't think I, like, exhaled once. It was just, heart was in your throat the whole time. The fans were in it from the very first whistle, and those nights are the ones you always remember, and it was a real pleasure and an honor to be a part of that.
Daniel, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Very, very fun conversation, and best of luck. Stay safe. We hope to see you on the pitch very soon.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. Me too.
Daniel Levitz, Nashville SC defender, and, you know, listening to that conversation, Ryan, it just – oh, I miss it. I miss sports, and I'm ready to go to my first MLS Nashville SC game because I was working Preds that night. I actually watched some of it the other day when it was on because, you know, I didn't really get to pay attention during the Preds game, and so I'm itching for it. And I know one thing that is very, very true, that we will all be back watching our sports sooner rather than later in the stands. I feel like it's going to happen. It just got to be a little patient.
Sure. Yeah. I wasn't there either. So I'm sharing those same feelings of being eager to attend my first Nashville SC MLS match. I was in New York out of town that weekend, but did catch some of it live on the Fox network. But yeah, it's going to be cool whenever sports return. And when it comes to soccer, you know, the UK government gave the Premier League the green light to restart their season June 1st without fans. So, you know, that could be a potential model.
I'm very excited about that.
Yes. That could be a potential model for how MLS could go about making their return, just like any other league is around the world that is maybe, you know, 2 to 4 weeks ahead of the time, the pandemic time before the U.S.
When we come back on the rundown, I need a recommendation. I need some help. I will explain what kind of help I need because some of you are thinking you need a lot. I'll do that next here on the rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. During this time, Crown Royal and ESPN 102.5 The Game would like to raise a toast to our heroes who are serving on the front lines to protect our communities. Thank you for your sacrifice. You're the definition of true royalty. To submit your local hero, connect with us on social media or text us at 615-737-1025. or visit thegamenashville.com and tell us about your heroes. Then join us at 4 p.m. each weekday as we raise a toast to our heroes. Cheers, Crown Royal. Must be 21 or older to toast. Please drink responsibly. Welcome back into the Rundown here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson hanging out as well. So I said that to start the show, I rubbed it in that I watched the 95 NLCS between my Braves and your Reds. Clean sweep. Braves going to the World Series, in which they won. But I had the two TV setup going. And I also watched WrestleMania 3, which happened way before either all of us were born. But it has one of my all-time favorite matches in it that I still think is probably the best wrestling match of all time between the Macho Man Randy Savage and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Now, you might be asking yourself, Ryan, why is he talking wrestling? Why is he bringing this up right now?
You exactly read my mind.
But I'm going somewhere. I have a point. I'm taking this somewhere. It was for the Intercontinental Championship. I was drawn in the big storyline of Hulk Hogan slamming Andre the Giant. That was overshadowed by this match. So where I'm going with this is, it sparked in my head, I wonder if other people have a recommendation of a sporting event that isn't considered mainstream, that is niche, so to speak, that I could go watch, whether it's, you know, current or old, like WrestleMania 3. So for you, does something come to mind that you think, okay, Chase might enjoy this, that I could go check out?
Well, not necessarily something that is non-mainstream when it comes to actual on-the-field sports. But I will say I've been doing a dive into some of the E60 on-demand videos on the ESPN app. So, you know, there's the Rex Chapman one on there, which is really good, and it's only like 20 minutes long, going through the ups and downs of Rex Chapman's basketball career, on the court, off the court, and how he's kind of become a Twitter phenomenon. That was a really well-done E60 piece. You know, one that we watched Sunday before The Last Dance, we were trying to kill some time, there's an E60 piece called Southmost. Have you seen this?
I have not.
Okay, so the E60 piece called Southmost is about two high schools that are in the southmost part of Texas that are essentially on the Mexico border. And there are kids who play high school football for one of the two rivals. These two high schools are rivals and mostly Hispanic. And they have family members that are on the other side of the border, and the city on the other side of the Mexico border has just a ton of drug cartel, and it's a spooky place to live. And while they're filming this, you know, the narrator slash the host takes one of the kids across the border to his family in Mexico, and all of a sudden, in the middle of them filming this, of the kid spending time with his family for the first time in who knows how long, they have someone tell them that there's a suspicious car driving around the neighborhood and that they needed to leave. So just instantly, they had to get in the car and get back to Texas. But it's basically telling the story of four high school kids, two on one high school team, two on another, in Brownsville, Texas, that have overcome a lot of personal things because of the border. It's really fascinating. So I would definitely recommend it. It's not the easiest watch, but it's just really fascinating to see that lifestyle down there on the border between Brownsville, Texas and Mexico.
Okay, that does sound interesting. I love the E60 pieces, and I said this. I've lost track of time, but one of the things that I kind of got into during all this downtime is I watched my TV shows for a while, but then I wanted to educate myself, and so I got into documentaries, and obviously The Last Dance has been one, but I watched a lot. I've gone through different 30 for 30s, but the E60 pieces are so well done.
And they're shorter in time, too.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to sit down and watch the 30 for 30, you have to commit yourself to one, two, or even more hours. Where the E60 pieces can range from 15 minutes to 45 minutes, and that's easier to knock out than a 30 for 30.
Now, again, sometimes you just want to warp your mind and just be silly. And I know, Marquise, you have a good suggestion because you recommended it last week, and I tuned in, and it was awesome.
I told you, man. Look, I know you well, man. You love some racing, man. You do. You love some racing. So
I want to go fast.
Lawnmower racing. I know it's on ESPN The Ocho, and that pops up every now and then, but I'm telling you, Chase, I can see you being like a Clayton Glassman fan because he was going fast, and I'm talking about fast. His lawnmower was a thing of beauty, and you would have loved it. He would have been your Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Well,
or Chuck Miller, for that matter, who probably won that race easier than most people win races in NASCAR. So I'm telling you, Chase, lawnmower racing. That's in.
I checked it out, and it was awesome. Because I can remember when I would mow my grandparents' lawn. They had a big riding mower. I would turn laps after I got done. I would just be like a race car driver turning laps. So.
Oh my god!
I loved it, man. Yeah. It was fantastic. Yeah. And then one of the guys had a lawnmower called the Golden Touch Lawnmower, and it was amazing. He was just like, well, I put a little bit of horsepower in there. I'll put a little thing. He started explaining like everything that he put in his lawnmower, and I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing television.
They
Why?
Get sponsors, too.
Yeah, they got sponsors and everything. I was like, this is amazing. Why is this not on TV more often?
I know.
And then they had women racing. It was just like everybody was out there. I think they had somebody from Middle Tennessee on there too. I just can't remember where in Middle Tennessee, but somebody from Middle Tennessee was on there.
Well, I think you could do this, Ryan.
The lawnmower racing?
Yes.
I wouldn't be very fast.
Oh, you don't know that.
It depends on if it's a push mower or a ride mower.
Well, it's a ride mower.
It's a ride mower.
Okay. Well, they should have push mower races. That would be fun.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Yeah.
That just sounds
lawnmower
like
racing
effort.
Sounds a lot better.
Yeah, well, it could be so terrible, it would be a fun watch.
Yeah.
If it was a push mower.
I would not partake in that. But
no,
riding
mower. You absolutely would not. Chase, you also texted me Saturday saying that you were watching the Cornhole League.
I did. I did watch it. That was cool. And those guys are intense. They had a kid that was, I think he was like 17 years old, and he had his earbuds in, and he was just ice water in his veins. I mean, this guy, and they were going through the different techniques of, like, if you have the bag blocking the hole, how you can move your wrist enough that it'll get it over that bag and just straight in the hole. It was fascinating. I kind of got hooked on it and watched for about 30 minutes or close to an hour just because of the skill that it was involved. And I'm sitting there going, I play this drunk on a boys trip every year, and these guys are getting paid to do it. This is hilarious.
Well, maybe next time you should have less brewskis and focus more.
I think I get better.
And maybe brewskis. You could find yourself in the American Cornhole League tournament.
Yeah, I walk into your office. Ryan, I'm leaving. I'm leaving the business. I'm going to become a professional cornhole player. All right, Chase, good luck. See ya. Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Real quick, one thing that we just started on Netflix last night was Parks and Rec.
I like Parks and Rec.
So
it's a good show.
Catching
sure.
up on that now.
That's going to do it for another edition of The Rundown. We'll be back at it at 9 o'clock tomorrow. Skillsy, Hal Gill, will join us at 9:30. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase is next. Tim Kirchen coming up at 10:15 on ESPN 102.5 The Game.